Welcome to Vitalize Radio. Some might remember this next guest as a 90s legendary throwback, but those with their finger on the pulse will know they've continued to release music much more recently. We're excited to be joined in the studio by Dream. How are you guys? How is life treating you in 2023?
Fine, Steve. Thank you for having us.
Marvellous.
Excellent. Yeah. Is it right? Just to clarify for my own needs, is it Dream or is it Dream?
D-Ream.
Are we D-Ream, we think? We never really thought about it.
No, it's definitely D-Ream.
D-Ream.
D-Ream, yeah. Or if you're further up north, it's Dirt-Ream.
Dirt-Ream, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. We'll get down to business then. You've just released The Best Thing, which, if I understand right, is not a best of, but a compilation of the first two albums alongside remixes and live tracks.
That's correct.
I would say, like, you know, an anthology. It's a real collection of stuff never before released that's from around that time. So from a collector's point of view or a fan's point of view, or indeed anyone who's got remote interest in us, it's a great way to a gateway into what we're about and our sound.
Excellent.
It's all remastered as well.
Well, Alan was just saying it's been digitally remastered, and I know that you hear this from people all the time, but at the time, but mastering of CDs was a very dark art, and there was a whole argument about whether they should be loud or low in order not to create digital clipping. Yeah. But this has been done now to modern standard, and it's sounding as good as it was in the studio back in the day. So it's popping out of the speakers. It's got all the excitement in it. So worth having a listen or a click.
Excellent. I mean, how did it come to form then?
Well, our single Things Can Only Get Better was number one 30 years ago in this just January coming.
Yeah.
So the label we're with wanted to sort of celebrate that, I suppose. So they asked us if they'd be up for something like this. So we got into our drawers and found out old bats and stuff.
Our collective drawers.
Collective drawers.
Yes.
And sent them to us and tried to find some interesting stuff that wasn't just the bog standard. Things when we were mastering the tracks, I was at the mastering, we found stuff on the 2-inch tapes that hadn't been released that I didn't even know existed. So pulled them out. And it just seemed like a good thing to do while we were recording new stuff to get something out to just keep our punters interested.
Yeah. And we got it remixed by Mark Knight and
Ilias and Barrientos. You'll get there one day.
No, it's not gonna end, it takes ages. Like, it's just one of those things. I just look, it's just a great way of sort of refreshing our old catalog, getting it out there. I mean, if people want Christmas presents and what have you, this is perfect for you know, a 90s dance music fan.
Yes.
And apart from that, it from our point of view, it just keeps the conversation going and directs people towards other questions like what are you doing now and what are we doing going forward? And that's, you know, that's what we're trying to get that over to people as well, that we haven't stopped making music. We're on our fifth studio album. This is our fourth compilation album, which we don't count, but it is, as I said, it's an
We had nothing to do with the old compilation.
No, that was just Warner's.
I was going to say, when you mentioned that the label asked you to be involved in that, that's not exactly a common occurrence.
No, it was that. We kind of co-owned stuff with the label, although they paid for to buy them. We've got
skin in the game with New State. They're really good guys. They're music lovers, and it's been a long time since we've been working with music lovers, and it does make a big difference because they give a damn, and so they've gone through everything, and they're putting on there as much as what they love as much as what we do. So no, I think it's a great moment in time, and it's captured that anniversary I think perfectly for us. But it's a stepping stone for us to go on. We're hopefully getting our new album together now, which we want to get out in the autumn, and this is going to be a double album, and it'll hopefully be met with some rapturous applause and aplomb and fanfare,
even from heavy rock fans.
Yes, well, you know what, funny you mention that, because our third album, In Memory Of, was I got this fantastic Gibson Les Paul, and it just sounded great, turned up to 11, and we put that up. It's actually coded, that album, so if anyone wants to hear a marriage of sort of heavy rock with dance, no, it's not Nine Inch Nails. It's its own thing, right? It's its own thing. It's more melodic than that, but we've sort of fused them to make them synthesizers and rock guitars work really well.
Excellent stuff. I mean, you're kind of covering my questions that I'd already had planned, but I will go through them.
Okay.
just because I'm a sucker for making sure that I get everything that I can.
Okay.
I'm obviously containing the biggest hits of your career. You've previously mentioned in other interviews like a love-hate relationship with some of those anthems.
Yeah.
What parts you've loved, and equally, when does it become a bit of a burden?
Do you know, if you go like anything, if you do too much of anything, it becomes a burden. And we have enough time off between like promotional stuff that we can kind of just appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah.
But I think back in the day, by the time I got to 95, 96, I was just, I'd really been through the mangle at that stage. And I thought it's time to just regroup because, look, people talk about their mental health now, you know, and I'm no more human being than the next person. It was just getting to me. Fame's a very strange thing. It's a very demanding thing.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be either really thick-skinned or, I suppose, like some sort of psychotic to be able to handle it. And I was neither. So, no, I got out of the game. And then when I came back to it with Alan, it makes it so much easier when you've got, like, a bandmate to share things with. And certainly when you're not under the pressure of the limelight all the time to be perfect and to be switched on. And that's really hard to do if you, you know... I find it hard to do.
I'm in terms of obviously with Things Can Only Get Better being used for the Labour campaign in 97. Was that something that was planned ahead with you guys, or was it just something
not
they
nice.
Well,
no, that came about from New Labour rebranding themselves, and I believe Lord Mandelson, he is now, who was no stranger to certain gay clubs, came up with that idea.
Yeah,
and you know, we were swept up in the zeitgeist, as it were, of that time, and went along with it. But if I could have a word with myself from now, I would be saying absolutely.
That kind of goes back to the last question about what you hate, what you love about things.
Yeah,
that would be the sort of thing you think, well, we wouldn't really have done that, but they would probably have used it anyway, regardless of people getting behind it as she did at the time.
Yeah.
You would have still used the song. So, you know, it's very difficult to stop these things once they've got it in the head.
Yeah, exactly.
And it certainly tapped into something that was around at the time, culture that was building with, obviously, you know, like political unrest around that time and stuff like that. You guys just encapsulated that massive swing, both politically and culturally. And is that something you're proud of, or is that something that you kind of...
For me, slightly different. Anything that gets the Tories out, for me, is a great thing. To be sort of part of that, I'm quite happy with that. I think it's not quite as politically motivated as I am.
I don't think you could put a cigarette paper between any of them. I think they're all crooks. So that's the way I look at them. Sorry.
I haven't been proved wrong yet. I genuinely try and the radio station stuff that I do, I generally is the only place I really try and keep my political leanings.
Discourse. You know what? I saw a great show not too long ago. I don't know if you remember. What was her name now? The actress who played the bitch. Do you remember?
Joan Collins.
And she was on being interviewed, and it was Louis Theroux.
Oh yeah.
And he got really down to it with it. And so like, I have to ask, what's your sort of political persuasion? Would you have voted for X, Y, and Z? And she says, darling, you know, I'm an actress at the end of the day, and nothing of what I have to say is any importance towards my acting or outcome. So I'm going to keep my opinions to myself. And I thought, you know what? I'm absolutely about that. You know, I can't. You know, as I was saying to Alan, you know, I can have sort of conservative views in certain areas, and then I have socialist views in certain areas. I can't find anyone who marries up to all of those things. And you have to jump into one camp or another. So do you know what I'm going to say? I'm just absolutely neutral on all of it. You know, I'm just the messenger. I'll just sing and I'll whinge about the lot that's in. Okay.
That's simple. You've got your message. And if someone wants to pick up on it and take it for their own meaning, then
that's it.
Good luck to them.
That's it. Good luck to them.
Excellent. You guys have hit the live circuit regularly since reforming back in 2008, and you've played some huge festivals. What would you say are the best parts of performing live?
You know what? It's there's sometimes we come off stage and it's been like the best gig we've had in a while, and we're all kind of we'd still get excited.
Yeah, of course,
And and then what happens is we end up taking that to the bar later. So you end up having this kind of, you can't come off that high. You come off with the adrenaline, and it's great. You know, it's just good. And then we have other gigs. That was really hard. I mean, it's never the crowd. It's all the stuff that goes on around it that kind of mean, I think what we had one there, not, I won't mention where it was, but we did it, and it was so cold that the heaters had failed. It was like minus two outside. It was minus two in the dressing room as well.
Yeah.
So we could see our breath in front of our mouths. And so we ended up sitting in the car for 3 hours before we were playing with the heater on. So, you know, that's the contrast of things, you know.
That's it. I mean, I suppose it's one of those things that leads me quite nicely on to my next question. What would you say are the weirdest bits about performing live?
Weirdest part of life. Oh, God. No, I've had, so at one point I had my hair sort of parted like that. And I don't know, I was wearing a suit and we'd gone up all the way to Hull to this nightclub.
Oh, yeah.
And someone did a Hitler salute to me because I just have a hair. And I was going, are you kidding? Are you really?
That was in that weather as well, I remember that.
Oh, you remember? And then there was another couple of
That's definitely the politics. You don't want to go down that road.
And then there was one night we were doing Kistery or something down at the O2 Arena. And I looked over just to my left. I'm on the stage, so it would have been your right. And there's two girls down there, and they were looking up, and they were young, and they were going, like, that stinks.
That's not good for radio, though, because
You can't see. I'm just I'm waving my nose in front of my face as if it's the symbol for that stinks.
Is that what they were doing?
That's what they were doing. And you know, if I had been a big diva, I would have stopped the music.
But when we started,
these two arrested.
The Sunday we turned up a gig in Melford Titville. Didn't even have a dressing room, and we literally
were in the toilet.
There's dancers in there, and every jag acts. Everyone's stuffed in this toilet.
That's the time when you need to just go get rid of everybody.
You'll be impressed. There's a new venue recently opened in Merthyr that definitely has dressing rooms. It's actually a very nice venue. In Merthyr, yeah.
Wow.
It's called the Red House.
Okay.
It looks like it used to be a former town hall, but yeah, honestly, try and get booked in back there in Merthyr. You're probably much more comfortable.
Okay, well, we might give them one more chance, but that toilet up that was pretty. Look, you find yourself with the highs and the lows, and the opposite to that was we did a Pride gig one time, and we were touring to Take that night, and we went that afternoon to this festival, which was down in Clapham. So there was 120,000 people there.
Wow.
And it was one of those balmy, sunny summers in London where the air was kind of bending with the heat.
Yeah.
And I could see the whole, the curvature of the earth with all these people, with, you know, with just the waving and singing the song. And then Jazz was backstage. I can't remember who else. Boy George was there. The sort of plethora of pop people. And then we had to get into the car and go and get on. We got into a helicopter and flew up to, I think it was Birmingham, where we were on stage in 20 minutes. And that was like, that's proper, you know. And then you get the toilets to Merthyr to Tidful, and then you've got that, you know. And there's your two extremes, you know.
I mean, in terms of that, then, you've obviously had the pleasure of playing with some amazing both musicians within your band, so the likes of Brian Cox, who's gone on to do some amazing things in science. But then you've also like shared stages with some amazing artists. What would you say have been your favourite parts of that?
Artist-wise, I went weaker than it. I was doing a gig one night in the Royal Albert Hall, and it was headlined by Elton John, and he was supported by Sting. Now, I'm a fanboy. I just went completely fanboy.
Oh, yeah.
So I brought down, I have my, you probably see it on, if you can see it on the wall there. Do you see that guitar in the corner?
I can indeed.
Yeah, that's my old Framus. Now, on that, I was taking it down. I wrote Things Can Only Get Better on That, and You're the Best Thing. And I was sort of like Billy's Boots. So I thought, I'll take that down and I'll get them to sign it, you see. But they put us in the other end of the hall, along with Stephen Fry and all the others, in the cheap green room, and they'd kept the really important artists in the proper green room. So I had to sort of, I was like some sort of ninja in the backstage area, which is a Warren, sort of ducking and diving and being really pleasant to the staff and the bouncers. And I just want to see Elton John and tell him about the charity on the guitar and all the rest of it. Finally make my way to their dressing room door. And God damn it, it's Richard Gere standing outside their dressing room, just watching the show that's on. And it's like one of those Stella Street moments. You think, you know, you remember the Stella
Oh,
Street?
yeah, of course.
So I was going like, I'm actually just trying to find Elton. And oh, they're fine. He knocked on the door and he said, Elton, it's Peter for you. And I was going, Richard Keir knows my name. And Elton went, yeah, I've got your album. It's brilliant. You know, I said, but would you sign my guitar, please, Elton? He went, yeah, sure. I said, do you mind Sting if you would sign it for me? And he went, Sting, sign Pete's guitar. And he went, go away. Because he's playing a chess match, you see.
Yeah.
And that, oh, the blood went out of my system. And you know, he says, oh, go on, you old queer. And he made him sign it. So I actually got their names on there, you know. And the idea is that I get it auctioned for our local hospice. But yeah, you know, that's just saying, that's the crazy stuff that happens when you're in that little bubble, that world, you know.
Absolutely. It's amazing. I mean, I'm in a local level band playing rock and heavy metal, etc.
What's your instrument?
I'm the vocalist. My ego or my backside doesn't fit anywhere else other than front of stage.
Front and center. Excellent.
But it's one of those things that obviously I know I'm not going to make money out of the music that I play. So I do it for the experiences. You know, I do it for the stories that I can bore my daughter with when she's old enough to listen to it.
Very good.
I mean, obviously, then you've touched on the fact there are plans for more new material. So what can you reveal?
Double album coming out, well, hopefully coming out in the autumn. We're trying to do some gigs around that as well. That's what next year entails. So we're here recording it this week. Well, still recording it this week. We've been on it for the last year, probably.
But, you know, we've no fear of... We use the sort of four to the floor as our kind of standard canvas, if you like. And that's always sort of the dance DNA is there. But we've no qualms about, you know, sticking in a heavy guitar or doing something very sort of Stonesy or, I don't know, something that's like the Cranberries, you know?
Yeah.
We can play around with that. We're definitely using more guitar than we ever did because that's my main instrument. And I really think that it makes some... They call it organic house, apparently, in some circles. But for us, we're just using real instruments. In fact, on Thursday, we've got Gemma Doherty coming to our studio. And she's just finished a tour with U2. And she's an Irish harpist. And she's going to come and lay down some Celtic harp on a couple of the songs for the album as well. So if you listen to this album that's coming up, you're going to see some Pink Floyd-y sort of stuff, you know.
Did that last album.
Yeah. It's got that vibe. And then, maybe we'll spread it across two CDs. We don't know. And the other CD will be just sort of like up-tempo, feel-good house with a bit of sort of progressive house in there or techno, whatever.
Whatever.
It simply sounds like you're having the time of your lives.
Exactly.
Creatively, it's
no
a great,
limits,
great
which is always
to be.
The best way.
Yeah,
it is. We're lucky enough to have enough money to be able to do this. How long we can last doing this, who knows? But we, you know, until they take the guitar out of my cold, dead hands, I'll be singing and playing.
Love it. I mean, you mentioned then tour plans with a new album. Is there anything that you can reveal, like anything coming local to South Wales?
Nothing solid yet. We've got a few gigs in at the moment, which are just around the country. Nothing in Wales right now. We've got Scotland, Ireland, and England, but not Wales, bizarrely. But
see, there's so
I
many tours that miss Wales out.
Well, it's down to the promoters to get in touch with us.
Absolutely.
That's the problem. We can't force them.
Yeah, we've got to go really where we're invited at the minute. But there will be, at some point, some sort of tour. It's just that the numbers don't add up at the minute. And, you know, everyone's really, like, feeling the pinch. So we've got to see what the lay of the land is next year before we start committing to anything really expensive. But we should be able to put something on. So keep in touch with us on Facebook because Alan's up there all the time. And, you know, if we do pull it off by the getting the album out in autumn, then we'll do something around that to support it, you know, 5 or 10 dates or something. But they won't be stadium. They'll be small, intimate. Look, I prefer the smaller gigs anyway, because we can just see the fans hook up and have a great time. And that's what we'll do.
Excellent stuff. Last but not least then, have you got a message for any of our listeners that are still absolutely loving what you're doing?
Keep loving it.
No, thank you. And love that you love what we're doing. And please, you know, spread the word. We need to tell people that we're back doing what we do.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Great, Steve. Yeah.
And hopefully we can check in again with you soon.
That'd
Thank
be
you
lovely.
Very much, sir.
And good luck with your little one, all right?
Thank you.